It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails, and we'll get back to those in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. It has been way too long since I talked to my old friend Lou Dobbs. You see him on Fox Business News. You've known him from radio in past years, but I didn't know that he had a novel in him. Lou, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Lars. It's great to talk with you. And you're right. It's been too long.
Well, and imagine this, a novel wrapped around the idea that an American is falsely accused of having connections to the Russians and becomes the center of a gigantic conspiracy. Now, knowing the turnaround time for books, you did not write this in the last 4 months, did you?
Right. It's 2 years, as you well know, in production to get to here. And little did any of us know, you know, I started writing these thrillers. This is my second one because Bob Gleason, the editor at Tor Books, asked me to do this. I thought at first it was crazy, but it turned out to be a great idea and a lot of fun.
The book is called Putin's Gambit, and no, it does not involve a politician. It actually involves a man who's in business, private business, and all of a sudden he's accused of being involved in a major transfer of money that involves the Russians. And really, I think maybe this book really needs to be read by a few people, including all those people who thought that Barack Obama was right when he said to Mitt Romney that the Russians weren't really a problem for the United States when it came to being a threat.
Yeah, I think that the timing of this book, because we were laughing about it at the talking with the editor a few weeks ago, the timing could not have been more propitious. And frankly, the research that we did to get to build the thriller, all is designed to inform the American public as well as entertain them about what Russia is up to in Europe, in the Mediterranean, in the Middle East, and how significantly the threat posed by both Russia and China remain, despite the end of the Cold War, some 20 years on from that point.
Lou, do you think you've got some good idea of what it is they are up to? Because it seems to me that their main goal seems to be create chaos for the rest of the world, and that somehow chaos is going to keep the Russian people's attention off of Russia's own problems and Vladimir Putin's failings of that country, and keep the United States rocked back on its heels if it possibly can.
Well, all of that is certainly being done, and being done at the direction of Vladimir Putin. But at the same time, I truly believe that the U.S. Foreign policy has just been awkward throughout the last, since 1991. We had an opportunity to build bridges, to build great partnerships with Russia, and chose instead to ignore them. And there are 1,700 deployed warheads, and you know, that wasn't a very clever step on our part, and now we're having to deal with all that has ensued. So to me, it's pretty clear that he, being Vladimir Putin, really means to create again the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, but in his image, empire in the image of Vladimir Putin, excuse me, whether it be the Mediterranean, whether it be North Africa, whether it be the Middle East, or Europe itself. Europe is the prize, and I think that Vladimir Putin has made it very clear that's exactly where he's headed.
Lou Dobbs is my guest. He's the author most recently of a novel. And this is your first novel, isn't it? You haven't written any other nonfiction books, have you? Or fiction books, have you?
Yeah, I wrote a book 2 years ago called Border Wars on the state of our southern border. And it was a hoot as well, and also it anticipated the arrival of someone very much like Donald Trump.
Well, and in fact, what I wonder about is you and I both spend most of our time dealing with the the nonfiction world. We deal with the factual world. Is it more fun to be able to go out and do some things where it doesn't have to stick exactly to the facts of the real world when you write it?
Well, Well, what's that? You know, it is fun. More fun, I don't know, because these issues that you and I get, we have the privilege of dealing with every day. I don't think I would say more fun, but it is certainly different. It's illuminating. And we reach an audience with a thriller like Putin's Gambit that we wouldn't normally reach through our nonfiction efforts, if you will, within the news business or talk radio. It's just a different way to get to a different and larger audience.
Hey, Lou, since I've got your ear right now, I want to get your take on this. How long can both the Democrat Party and the news media push along this? We have to investigate Russia and its alleged connections to the Trump administration when after 12 months now, I mean, if you date it back to June of last year, when the FBI says it first began looking at it, they haven't found anything at all. Nothing.
You're absolutely right. And they will push it as long as President Trump permits them and Attorney General Sessions permits them. When you hear that the U.S. Justice Department has opened an investigation into James Comey, when you hear that they've opened an investigation into Loretta Lynch and former President Bill Clinton and their discussions on the tarmac in Phoenix, when you hear that the Clinton Foundation is now under investigation, that is Hillary Clinton under investigation for both that and her email servers and the Uranium One decision that cost us 20% of our uranium assets, then you will know that the collusion part is over. And now that we will have turned, if you will, from fiction to nonfiction.
You know, that last part about Uranium One, that I think is the most troubling one to me, because it seems like the lowest hanging fruit they could go after to say, was there a tie between the $30 million donation given to the Clinton Foundation by a man, a Canadian, who helped engineer the deal that Right. left Russia owning 20% of our uranium reserves? That one seems like something that a junior grade prosecutor in the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office could put together in about an afternoon. Let's see. The Russians ended up with the uranium. This guy made $300 million. He kicked a 10% bonus over to Hillary. Hillary signed off on the deal, without which the deal could not have happened because she was Secretary of State at the time. The quid pro quo there doesn't seem to take a rocket scientist to figure out.
Right. And Bill Clinton got a $500,000 speaking fee shortly thereafter in Moscow. So,
well, but that's but you don't expect at all that any of the investigation is going to go in that direction, do you?
No, I do. I actually do, because otherwise, what would be the point of having Jeff Sessions as Attorney General? What would be the point of having an administration that means to enforce law and order? You can't have law and order if you give a pass to Hillary Clinton and the Clinton criminal enterprise. It just can't be done.
Well, I got to tell you, Lou, every time that Robert Mueller picks up another ex-Clinton Foundation lawyer to add to his team, I start to lose hope that we're actually going to find out what really went on.
If Robert Mueller is still there in 30 days, then we do have dark days upon us. He either has to recuse himself and resign the special counsel or be fired by the president, because he's contemptuous of law, contemptuous of the very appearance of conflicts of interest that are prohibited by the special counsel statute itself. This is rank and raw corruption and conflict of interest, and it's got to stop. And if it doesn't stop here, it never will.
His most recent novel is called Putin's Gambit. He is Lou Dobbs from Fox News Business. Lou, it's a pleasure to have you back on the program. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you. And it's great to talk with you. And I look forward to talk to you soon. And join me on my show, if you will.
I will do that one of these days. Thank you so very much. That's Lou Dobbs with us. Back in just a moment, folks. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Our quick poll question today goes this way. Should all Northwest police agencies quickly adopt and use body cameras as Eugene now has? Officers are required to tell any person they contact that their interaction is being recorded. Quality of video and audio is much higher than the dash cam videos. The videos will be stored for a minimum 6 months, and if not used as evidence at a crime, then of course they'll be stored for longer. Public release will follow the same public records request as other public documents, although state law says that they must fuzz out all of the faces of all of the people in the video before disclosure. I think that's probably the biggest problem with it. And then, of course, we've got the item that I began with today, and that is the shooting of Alexander David Brodigan, 24 years old, died of a gunshot to the head. And what is being downplayed to some extent is that Brodigan was apparently involved in a dope deal. He was selling marijuana to two teenagers, one 20-year-old and one 21-year-old, an adult. And the teenagers and the other younger people had apparently decided they weren't going to pay for the pot. They brought a gun with them, and they told the police they planned to use it. When Brodigan began to fight with them over the bag of marijuana, they decided to shoot him for a bag of marijuana. Now, do you remember all the promises that were made by the people who said, if you'll just legalize pot, we will get rid of all the criminal activity that goes on around pot, like illegal sales? And on that point, I'd point out Benton County, Washington, not Benton County, Oregon, Benton County, Washington, in the city of Benton City, Washington, the cops have just raided a huge illegal grow operation, 1,600 plants being grown. So for all those people who told you, if you just legalize pot, you won't have the illegal stuff anymore, guess again, that's not the way it's working. Let's go to Kevin. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hi, how you doing, Lars?
Very well. What's on your
Great
mind?
To be here. Nothing. I just wanted to talk about that those police shootings and how everyone's saying that it's racism and whatnot. And all I want to say is that's a bunch of malarkey, because I've been pulled over by multiple police agencies, and the only time I've ever had a gun drawn on me was because of my stupid self getting out of the car real quick. And that was the only time that I ever got a gun pulled on me by an officer. But like I said, I made the choice of getting out of my car quickly. And she told me, get in my car. And I got back in my car, and I ended up leaving that scene with no ticket or no warning or nothing. She just said, drive safe.
Yeah, and when the officer pulls you over, don't jump out of your car, because they don't know what you're planning to do. You could be running at them with a weapon.
Exactly, and I was 20 at the time when I did that. And so I just jumped out of my car thinking I was okay, and then next thing I know, I see the barrel of a gun, and I'm like, okay, back in my car. And I just sat there until she came up and started talking to me, and I was like, what? She asked me, why did I jump out the car? And I was just like, I was home. I thought I was okay, and apparently I wasn't.
So tell me this. What would be the best way to get younger people like you were when you were 20 to understand that when you're pulled over by the police, this isn't like any other interaction you have? It's not like going to the gas station or the grocery store or some other place.
Not at all.
And that you have to be on a slightly different, a little more precise kind of behavior. Do you think that having teachers or cops talk to people in high school would get them to wise up to that, to say, if the cops pull me over, I'm going to mind all my P's and Q's, and that's the way to make it end the best way?
Exactly, because if the situation would have gone differently, I probably wouldn't be here today. I'd probably be one of those people that you would be talking on your radio station right now saying that he made the choice and it was my choice to get out of my car.
That's a good point. I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Let's go to George in Spokane, listening on KXLY. Hey, George, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. I want to talk about that woman, mentally ill woman with the knives was shot. Now, and it seems to be SOP that they just shoot people with knives. Now, I knew a guy named Tom Hubble. He's a retired police officer. He was active in the 1960s. And he had a cigar box full of switchblade knives that he confiscated from criminals. And it was just like his favorite thing to do, because that guy pulled out a knife, he'd get out his stick, and he got all of them. And he had that box full of knives to show me what changed.
Well, hold on. When you say the police shoot everyone with a knife, if the police shot everyone who displayed a knife, I have a feeling there'd be a lot more dead bodies, don't you think?
You said Well, that's kind of like the impression I got when you said that the woman had a knife. They can.
She had two knives. She had a knife in each hand. Now, if somebody was running at you with a knife in each hand, what would you as a non-law enforcement officer assume if somebody was running at you with a knife in each hand?
Let me put it this way. Tom Hubbell, who's a police officer in his 60s, he used that stick. And that was his idea of fun.
Apparently you didn't hear my question, did you, George?
Normal.
George, did you even hear my question?
You're saying because they had two knives instead of one knife, it makes a difference.
I'm saying if somebody's running at me with one knife or two knives, I assume they don't mean me any good.
Let me put it this way, is that this guy is a police officer.
Now you're just repeating yourself. But, George, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Larry in Port Orchard. Hey, Larry, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, how you doing, Lars?
Doing very well. What's on your mind?
I'm a retired police officer, and I just wanted to ask the question of when knives lost the designation of deadly weapons.
I think they've always been deadly weapons, haven't they?
Well, according to the media today, they don't seem to be.
Yeah, they seem to downplay the... I even had a lady call me yesterday saying, well, it was a woman with a knife. After all, a man up against a woman with a knife, her attitude was, she's not a problem at all. I think the officers and anybody who's ever been stabbed with a knife would probably tell you different.
Absolutely. In our training, number one, if you're within 21 feet of a person holding a knife, you're in danger territory, and number two, you meet force with equal or greater force, because your primary job as a law enforcement officer or as anybody else employed anywhere in the world is to go home at the end of your shift to your loved ones, and the rest of it comes secondary.
See, I don't think that's unreasonable at all. Larry, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call from Port Orchard. Thanks for listening on KGMI, part of the Great Radio Northwest Network. By the way, there are new documents out that describe that Oregon's Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum tried to participate in a joint investigation of Governor John Kitzhaber, the corrupt former governor of Oregon who's resigned some time ago. But it appears that the federal government said, we don't want you involved in the investigation, and they forced her to stop that investigation. Wouldn't it be nice to see them actually go back to that investigation and decide whether or not John Kitzhaber and his girlfriend Sylvia Hayes broke the law by selling influence out of the governor's office, earning a couple of $100,000? You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, I have some great news today. Tina and I today are celebrating 20 years of being married. And she says it doesn't feel any longer than 30 or 40 years. I think that was her reaction to today's anniversary. But happy anniversary, sweetie. 20 great years and many decades to come. You know, unless, of course, the liberals get that way and I'm erased somehow. But it's great to be with you. Glad to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to take your phone calls and emails. I want to know if any of you have a job in which you could perform as poorly as the state legislatures of Oregon and Washington do. Let me give you a couple of data points for that. We are standing here right now, heading into summer, and the Oregon legislature has been at it for months, and they have not yet finished a budget for the state. So they're being forced to use a bill as a continuing resolution to keep on spending. Now, at your company, if you're one of the folks who have to write a budget, and I always feel sorry for the folks who have to write budgets within companies, because at budget time, it's never any fun. But can you imagine if you told your boss, hey, boss, I'm sorry, I know the budget was due on June the 30th, but I'm not going to be done for maybe a few weeks after that. So I just couldn't get it finished. So just keep everything going the way it normally is and forget about the budget. Do you think your boss in the private sector would buy that kind of nonsense? Meanwhile, up in Olympia, the Washington state legislature still has not finished a budget. And the head of the spokeswoman for the state parks department, now get this, if they do not have a state budget finished by a week from tomorrow, by the 30th, that is a Friday, then the state parks department has a contingency plan in which next Friday, if they do not have a finished budget or some kind of ongoing continuing resolution, the state parks department will start shutting down heading into the 4th of July weekend. Now, what an insult to the taxpayers of Washington state. I pay taxes in both states, but can you imagine telling your customers, I'm sorry, we won't have a state parks department operating over the 4th of July weekend. So all those plans you had, If they don't have a budget done by a week from tomorrow, and they've had months to get it done, they're now in special session number three, that they will have to start shutting the parks down. Now, how crazy is that? Nobody in the private sector would get away with that and keep his or her job. And yet in government, they say, oh, yeah, yeah, we do this all the time. We run it right up to the deadline, and then they finally sign a budget in the wee hours of the 29th of June so that we can make sure to keep the whole state running. We're talking about multi-billion dollar agencies here, the states of Oregon and Washington, that are run by a bunch of people who act more like the kid who was told 3 months ago that a term paper was due at school, and mom finds him sitting down to start writing the term paper at about 9 o'clock on Sunday night, the paper being due at 8 o'clock on Monday morning. Now, that works when you're 10 or 12 years old, or at least adults find it excusable. When it's done by state legislators, I don't find it excusable at all. Let's go to Richard. Hey, Richard, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on this Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
Congratulations, Lars, on your 20-year anniversary.
Thank you.
First off. And my call is regarding this professor that went on this rant against the Republicans and the first responders for all of those individuals who were shot at the practice of the ball field, and said that he believed that they should have let them die, using all these incredible expletives, and then continued to go on and on and on. And so my question is, do you think that individual will retain his job as a professor?
Yes. I think the short answer is yes. And here's how. Because universities are run by, for the most part, liberals. They're populated mostly by liberals. And most of the state lawmakers that they answer back to are liberals. And they excuse a bunch in those kinds of circumstances. I see professors. Occasionally, you'll see one get fired. There was one at, Old Miss. Was it Mississippi or was it Missouri? It might have been Missouri, where the professor got fired. It was a woman who had come out and saying, we need some muscle over here. She was actually threatening to use physical violence against people they disagreed with. And she got fired. I think she got hired by Gonzaga, believe it or not. And so she ended. So imagine that. One university fires a professor for threatening physical violence against people she disagrees with, and she gets picked up by a fairly decent private university in Spokane, if you can figure that out.
No, it's just amazing to me the amount of hate and divisive and incredible language this individual used. And then when he was confronted about it, he said that he did not anticipate that it would be public information, even though he posted it on Facebook. Now, come on. The guy is supposed to have an education, a little common sense. It just seems horrific that they tolerate this.
I think it is as well. And the only thing that will change it, Richard, is if you could get the boards of trustees for these universities to be populated with at least a few sensible people. But based on the decisions that are made for many of the, you know, colleges in the United States of America, I don't think the boards of trustees are sensible a lot of the time. I would think that they would fire.
Yeah.
I mean, think about this. You know, Travis Kalanick, the guy who's the CEO of Uber and the majority stockholder in Uber, he said stupid things. He got caught on video, and he had said and done some stupid things. He got fired from his own company as the CEO. Because in the private sector, even when you're, you know, even when you are the majority stockholder and everything else, you can still get fired. I don't know what it takes to get fired as a college professor at Evergreen College. You had the one professor who happens to be a liberal, but he objected to the No Whites Day on campus, where the black students on campus wanted all the white people to leave campus for a day. And he objected and said that's unreasonable, which I thought was a reasonable point of view. 50 or 60 of the professors on that campus signed a letter that disagreed with him and thought that it was reasonable to force people off campus because of their skin color. If that doesn't tell you, you know, pretty much the whole story about what's going on in America's liberal college campuses, and then imagine this, your tax dollars and my tax dollars are going to support that kind of nonsense, and your kids or grandkids are subject to education in those cockamamie institutions.
Yeah, our educational system's in big trouble. It'll be interesting to see also how the University of California system makes out since they complied with, I believe it was UC Santa Cruz, where they came in, the students took over, the black students took over a complete section, and they said they would not leave, would not give them back their administrative offices until they complied with their demands. And they did comply, and I cannot imagine if a school the size of UCLA with 50,000, almost 50,000 students decides to do the same thing. Huge problems.
It is a huge problem, and I think those institutions should say, if you want to engage in civil disobedience, be prepared to pay the cost. The cost is getting hauled away with zip cuffs, taken down to the police station, cited, and likely released, but you're going to have to pay a consequence for doing that. When there is no consequence, then you're sending the wrong kind of message. I absolutely agree with you. Let's go to Shane in Medford. Hey, Shane, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Thanks for having me on. Congratulations on the 20 years with your wife.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about that woman that had the knives and she was coming at the police officers.
Yeah.
I was, you know, there's really not much physical protection for the police officers in regards to knife attacks. I mean, they do wear Kevlar. That can stop a bullet, you know, if, depending upon the placement of the shot. But as far as attacking a police officer with a knife, though, I from what I understand, the knife will pierce right through that Kevlar. It'll go right through.
It can. And if you notice the stabbing that happened at the Flint, Michigan airport just yesterday, the officer was stabbed in the neck above his vest. So I guess unless they go out all dressed up like the characters in Game of Thrones, you know, with a full helmet that goes down to your shoulders, I don't know how to protect the police from those kinds of attacks.
Yeah, so I'm definitely in support of their decision making in this, you know, in this instance, because, you know, that a knife in most some instances can be more deadly than a gunshot, I suppose.
Wouldn't it be nice, too, if we had a news media that when a guy is shouting Allahu Akbar as he's sticking a knife in the neck of a police officer, could actually do something more than saying, we're still trying to figure out his motive. We're not quite sure what motivated him. It gets a little silly at some point. Glad to have you with me. Glad to take your calls as well. We've got a lot to talk about today, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. We love doing a little kissing for a radio kiss, that is, for a good cause. And Caroline Ackerman joins us now, who's the owner of Let Caroline Paint It. So, Caroline, before people draw the conclusion that you're just another painting company, you have to explain what makes your company different and what you do for the community.
Sure, you bet. Thank you, Lars, so much. I own Let Caroline Paint It and also Get the Let Out. We are a painting contracting company for both residential and commercial, and 50% of all profits from both companies are donated to homeless and abused animals.
Now, describe what you mean by homeless and abused animals. Where are you typically finding these?
Well, gosh, just everywhere. Usually, and what we do, we don't just write checks to individuals or organizations, but rather what we do is we fund medical accounts throughout Portland, and we also will help individuals who find themselves in an emergency situation. You know, yesterday we had a dog get attacked by another dog. The gentleman didn't have the money for the surgery, so the company steps in and pays for things like that. We also go into disaster zones where there are rescue organizations on the ground pulling animals out, and we will ship them down pallets of the needed supplies, whether that be bedding, food, containment. We're actually working with Louisiana right now due to the storms and flooding they have down there. We worked with them the last time there was flooding, and also in the California fires.
Well, I'll tell you what, I just managed to get out of Louisiana right before the storms began on Tuesday morning, and I can see from the television that it looks like there's going to be a lot of water and a lot of trouble for people who've got pets that may go running off when they have that situation. Caroline, where's your website so folks can find out more?
It is www.ipaintforpaws.com.
Ipaintforpaws.com. Very good, Caroline. Thanks a lot for doing what you do. Let's go to I love naysayers. Let's go first to Dave, who's a naysayer. Dave, what do you and I disagree about?
I'm not saying we disagree. I'm saying I didn't understand.
Okay.
You made a comment earlier
put the pistol back in the holster, pull out the less than lethal, and then deal with the situation.
Yeah. People were asking, why didn't they tase this woman? Well, it turns out there were no tasers on scene, but even if there had been, if the officer had had two pistols, one in his hand, one in the holster, the taser in the holster, to get the taser out, he's got to reholster the first gun, and he's got to pull out the taser. Now, that may only take half a second or three-quarter of a second, but at that point, the person who's coming at you with the knives can cover a lot of territory in a very short length of time.
Theoretically, yes.
Theoretically? Yes. Hold on a second. Yes. Any human being with two legs can cover a lot of ground in a second and a half. When we're talking about distances of 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 feet, unless you're physically incapable, how fast can you cover 15 feet if you had to?
I'm almost 60 years old. I don't cover as fast as I did when I was 20.
Okay, but at 15 feet, you might cover, it might take you 3 seconds, right?
I know. The lady was, middle-aged? And she was, I'm assuming, not a fitness model or something like that.
No, but she was coming at the officer with a knife in each hand. How much time did you want the officer to take?
I understand that. Let's go back to the techniques and tactics to tell you, okay? You said there were no tasers involved, right?
There were no tasers at the scene. The officers had pistols.
How many? Did they have anything
else? There were two officers. No, they had their Seattle officers are apparently either offered a baton or mace or a taser. And as I said, I've had officers tell me people think that this is magic. Like you just pick the right weapon at the right time every single time.
That's not what I'm saying, if you'd let me finish.
Well, then ask.
Yeah. The why did they not go in there with a pre-plan that one used less than lethal and one backs up with a pistol?
Well, how do you pre-plan for a domestic since, I mean, I've gone on ride-alongs. Domestics are, every single one of them is slightly different. Sometimes the people are high, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're armed, sometimes they're not. Sometimes the people are wound up beyond all belief. I've seen really crazy people on domestics. Sometimes they seem amazingly calm. But it may be the amazingly calm person who sticks a knife in your neck. Let's go to Pat in Bellingham. Hey, Pat, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Lars. My point is the woman was only 78 pounds.
So?
So the officer could have kicked her. He could have stuck his foot in her, you know, and knocked the nut.
And what? I think he faded out. Pat, are you there? Pat, I think your cell phone may have given up the ghost. You know, I know that everyone wants every officer to be Steven Seagal or to be, some guy who's or gal who's an expert in every kind of martial art from the Far East, fly up in the air, you know, kick somebody with your feet. The fact is, the way to save your life when you're talking to the police is don't present a threat. If you decide to present a threat because you're crazy, because you're angry, because you're high or some other reason, it is you who are deciding to forfeit your own life. I very rarely heard about an instance ever where a person who didn't present a threat ended up being shot by the police. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.